Pozo. Crema.
De regreso para Jerry. Busca otra vez en el give and go con Allen. Afuera para Thomas. Uno más en la esquina para Wade. ¡Sí, señor! ¡Team Wolf!
Broadcasting live.
Ish.
From Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse on the sunny shores of beautiful Lake Erie.
Move to the baseline. Iarchy pass to Tatum. Tatum then tried to set it inside to Langford. The pass was ill-advised. The Coro at the other end off the Sexton feed.
In downtown Cleveland.
Hello, Cleveland! Hello, Cleveland!
You've tuned in to Wine and Gold Radio.
Rebound knocked up in the air. Slapped by Mills. Out to Brandon. Brandon coming to the forecourt. Brandon with three, with two. On the run. Good! He beats the buzzer! Cavs win!
Now, here are your hosts, Rafa, J-Bike, and Joe G.
You see that sign? No shirt, no shoes,
no ties.
Right.
Yay!
Yay!
Yay, everybody. And welcome to episode 15, the final episode of the regular season.
I got to do a special one then. Wine and Gold Radio.
Yeah, bring it, baby. And today, unfortunately for the last episode, you know how injuries have kind of hit the Cavs down the stretch
hard.
Here? And yeah, they hit him hard all year long and again down the stretch. Well, we have a casualty for episode 15. John Michael had some technical difficulties.
Who has been dealing with technical difficulties.
All year long, right. He's had a nagging technical difficulties injury all year long he's been dealing with. And Jared Allen is on his way to Washington, D.C. for the final road trip of the season, so we weren't able to send him out to John's house. So Jared, you know,
Jared is the official, unofficial.
Right. He's the technical guy. So with John out, we look down the bench, and this would be like looking down the bench, and all of a sudden you look down the bench and you see Magic Johnson. Instead of seeing some G League scrub, you look down the bench and you look down, and there's a Hall of Famer sitting there. You can put him right in the game. And here we have Tad Carper. Tad, give me your – I don't even know your title anymore. VP of everything.
Titles are a little bit overrated.
He's the communicator.
Yeah. He's the top – dog of communications. He's I don't want to say he used to be my boss. He's really all of our bosses in that.
I think he still is.
Tad is all of our bosses in that if you see an email from tcarper@cavs.com, your heart stops just for a second. You stop and you wonder, okay.
What did I do?
What did I do wrong?
not to mention the intrepidation I had in sending it.
Well, we didn't. Yeah. We don't know. You know, we figure, you know. So, welcome, Tad. Welcome to Wine and Gold Radio. We waited all season for you.
It is so great to be here, and especially with you two, Rafa and Joe. There are very, very few. It's a short list of my peers and fellow team members here that I would feel comfortable conversing with.
Yeah.
Tad also has, you know, I wrote this down, Tad also has the coolest hair in the company. I don't know how many people are in this company, in the company about?
Almost 500. Now.
Almost 500. Tad is number one. You're number one ranking in the hair, all-time ranking. Not all-time. Now, Pat Scanlon thinks he's got better hair than you, but he doesn't. Needs a haircut.
Well, he's really turned over a new leaf as of late. And his mane is really
– it's unchecked.
It requires its own zip code.
Yeah. So he's kind of – you know, we were celebrating the Rock Hall and our partnership with the Rock Hall all year, and he's embraced that role. He's kind of got the rocker thing going this year.
Does it? You consider that rock and roll?
Who, Pat?
Yeah, the hair you're talking about.
He's got the long hair. I mean, if you can do it, shoot.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you can have that long
especially
hair.
Especially if it's white or gray.
Yeah. And you know, so,
which his is.
Yeah, it's really cool.
But I came back from the abyss because, as you both know, I went through many years where I – did the full close shave and had no hair.
Yeah, and
basically,
I never understood that because usually people do that when they can't grow it.
Yeah,
it was offensive.
That's
to me.
Not the.
It was offensive
right?
to me. And
what
I
was
to,
it?
And I, and I told that. I told Tad that on several occasions. I said, "You doing that is an affront to me." I said, "I can't grow hair, and you can, and you're not. You're shaving your head." I said, "Tad, it's wrong."
Was that like
it's
a mood, a vibe at the time?
It was, and I've heard that question and received that feedback from from several others, including my wife. Why are you doing that? And I really didn't. I got to the point where I really didn't have a good answer for it, because part of the answer, I'll be somewhat hesitant to admit, was just pure laziness. And being on the road, as we are,
yes,
or as I was, so often, and that schedule, and it just is a lot easier just to have no hair. And I decided that I was going in on that full bore, and I did. And then after a while, I started feeling, you know what, maybe Joe G's right. If one can have hair, then maybe one should.
Yes. Yeah. One must have hair. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think you should. Tad, normally we kind of talk a little hoops in the first segment, so then that way we don't have to for the rest of the show. Not that we don't want to, but again, we have a guest like you. We're going to talk a lot of hoops, but we need to talk about you.
Well,
when we have a guest of your stature, we have a million questions. I have a million questions.
I beg to differ, because really, this is more like an old Price is Right show, where I'm kind of the consolation prize.
You try behind door C. You try to figure out what game you're going to play before you spin the wheel.
You're top level. So we'll talk a little hoops right now, Tad. The Wine and Gold win streak, the Wine and Gold Radio win streak, it's back. It's back on last night. Cavs snap an 11-game skid, beat the Celtics. That was nice. I love beating the Celtics anytime, anywhere, anytime. It's great beating the Celtics.
Yeah. Me too.
So knocking them off was great. It was great just to get a win for the fans. They needed that.
Well, and especially the last home game of the season. And being able to play a team that you've had so many battles with over the years, and recently, if you consider, you know, basically the last decade, the battles between the Cavaliers and Celtics have been epic. And there's so many different storylines in play. We all know what they are. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, a win is a win. And right now and last night, that was really, really nice to see.
And I'll tell you what, I always say this to people that ask me questions about the state of the Cavs, and I always say it's different when you're close on a day-to-day, like we have the luxury and the honor to be.
Sure.
And the process that we're going through right now is not an overnight thing where you're going to see the result. And JB and I have talked about this season about how you are in a situation that we are, that the result don't usually show up in the W column, right? Mm-hmm. So to see the effort of the guys come to fruition in a night like that, it was so important. It's just a W, but it's so important to finish the home season with a W, fan appreciation night, and we know they're all giving it their 100%. They all want to win. They're all trying to stay. They're all trying to be NBA players. I mean, it's a whole variety of things going on, and that's what I think we have the luxury to witness on a day-to-day basis, even during this pandemic thing.
Well, and even you know, specifics about it. You know, it was wonderful to see Kevin Love, and what he was able to do last night, and have 30, and just play an all around solid game. But even if you look over the losing streak that preceded last night, there were still moments and performances and impacts that were very encouraging and wonderful to see, because we're talking about such a young group. And when you see guys like Isaac Okoro and Colin and even, you know, Dean Wade, you know, for that matter, and others contribute the way that they have, you know, ultimately it's all about winning, and there's no doubt about that. But it's also about being able to see the progression and the development and the evolution of guys, and probably not the least of which is just understanding their commitment and their dedication to continuing to come out every night and just leave it all out on the floor. And again, sometimes that doesn't translate to a win, but it also speaks to the culture and the grasp that J.B. Bickerstaff and our front office has with this group, and understanding who they are and how they want to continue to battle night in and night out.
And not to mention, we're actually watching them grow up.
Right.
I mean, these are kids. I mean, do you remember when you were 20, 21, 22 years old?
Yes. No.
I mean, that is the most amazing thing, I think.
Yeah. Well, when you look at the guys, they're so super young, we just forget about it. You mentioned Isaac Okoro. I mean, this guy's 20 years old. Imagine what he will be at 23. You know, 24.
Well, and what he went through this season.
Exactly.
And what he was faced with, tasked with,
mm-hmm.
and he embraced it.
Yeah.
And he, I think, learned and grew, obviously. Just not theoretically. He lived it.
Yeah.
Game in and game out.
And he played with, like, the cards that he was dealt, a short college season.
Yeah.
No summer, no summer league, no time to get used to what he's going to – I mean, right. He was thrown in there 2 weeks later.
All sorts of –
guess what, brother? You're starting in the NBA, right. And his maturity, I think, is something that people overlook.
His ability to
process all that.
Yeah.
Because the game changes. I don't care what anybody says. It's just basketball. The game completely changes from one level to the other.
Right.
And that his ability to process all that day by day and then keep getting up from stumbles because it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all these guys come in from being the number one guy in their team in college or wherever they came from, and then they're just part of a group that
right. Instead of fading down the stretch, instead of hitting the rookie wall, he got better.
He went through the wall.
Right, he went through the wall and got way better. I remember a shoot-around morning asking JB about the rookie wall, specifically with Isaac, and he said, well, no, I think he's ready to push through, and he did, and he ran through it, and he's getting better as the season ends.
Well, I can remember somebody else that did that, and that guy is Colin Sexton,
mm-hmm.
who just blasted through that wall, kept going, got better and better as his rookie season progressed,
mm-hmm.
and overcame adversity. All these guys, you know, in terms of the lineup changes and things that are out of the control of them individually, but personally, the commitment from all of them is still very apparent.
When you mention those two guys specifically, and again, they sit next to each other on the plane, both Atlanta guys, and I didn't want to bring this up until the end of the year, but you also got to look at their durability.
Oh, yeah.
This year, I mean, there's so many injuries. There's so many injuries this year and around the NBA. The fact that these guys can go, you know, Isaac missed five games, I think, with some COVID stuff earlier in the season, and he hasn't missed a start since. You know, he's plowed through and gotten better. So
and he's been this two, the three, sometimes
right,
the four.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, he's got to check a point guard one night. He's got to check a power forward the next night.
And man, the stretches that he went through the season, even the recent one when Booker came in, then Westbrook and Beal came in,
yeah.
and then Luka came in. And it was just like back to back to back, no break. It's not like no easy outs the way they say
right.
sometimes in baseball in the lineup. You know, he just had to show up every night.
Yeah, and coming out of college, they said about how, you know, about what a project he was going to be offensively, about how, boy, his offense needs to really pick up. When I watch him, it doesn't look like, you know, I mean, he's hesitant as any rookie would be, but on a skill level, is there anything offensively he can't do where you look and you say, boy, he can't do that? He can. He can do it all. He can shoot. He can drive. He can handle.
Yep.
He can distribute. He can do it all on the offensive end. He just needs to get a little seasoning.
He stays active.
Mm-hmm.
And movement without the ball, as you both know, is so important.
Key.
In the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And the comprehension of the entire court on both ends and the need to move and stay active and connected with what is progressing, understanding how a play is going to evolve and reacting to that in real time is something that's not easy to do. And especially for somebody that's coming into the league under the circumstances that he did without a regular training camp and all that, you know, and learning on the fly and then just committing to it shows that, A, there's that deep commitment level that we talked about.
Yep.
But that organic understanding of, okay, here's what I have to do. to be successful at this level. Mm-hmm. And part of that is my play without the ball and how I move in relation to everybody else on the court. So good to see.
Yeah, and a good attitude, good kid,
yeah,
hard worker.
Wants to learn.
Yeah, great head on his shoulders. I mean, he's really something to look forward to in going into next year.
I think the whole group of guys, the whole group of the young core that we have right now, it's something that, like I said, it is not an overnight success that we're going to have. But if you evaluate where we were last year, what Darius Garland was last year and what he was able to do this year, considering what he had before, he was recovering from an injury, five games in college, and then his first season gets cut short.
Yeah.
The second summer gets cut, like, get thrown up upside down. So it's I can't wait already for next season.
Yeah, and I think everybody's glad for Kevin too, because you know the off season can be long. If you ended on a bad note or something, you know, we got knocked out of the playoffs or whatever it is, that off season can be long if you have something to think about. Yeah. Kevin can go into the off season thinking, boy, at the end of that season, I felt like myself again. For one night, I felt like myself again. It's there. It's still in there. So he's got to feel real good. Okay. That's enough basketball talk for now.
Let's talk to fun stuff, man.
We're going to get to the fun stuff. Let's do segment two. Let's take a quick break, and we'll get back with Tad Carper. Segment two, I have a ton of index cards full of questions for Tad, so get ready. You might want to go back in the green room and get yourself a drink.
It's at this very moment that I'm questioning my decision to do this.
Right, like Tad's looking at the index cards. And he's
like a whole deck of cards.
This is a bad idea.
Right.
We'll be right back with segment two on episode 15, Rob.
Why not go ready?
Hi, this is Darius Garland, and I never listen to Wine and Go Radio.
I like that.
There's more of this.
Wine and Gold Radio.
After this. On Wine and Gold Radio.
Designed from the land, for the land, the Team Shop has introduced a new in-house apparel line called the Land Collective. The first series is inspired by the 2020 NBA Draft. Each series will focus on a specific theme and feature exclusive pieces that will only be available while supplies last. Get these new looks from the Team Shop today only at calves.com/shop. For more style inspiration and to be the first to know about upcoming collections, follow at Land Collective on Instagram.
Sing it, Jimmy. Sing it.
Oh, yeah.
Come on now.
Now if there's a smile upon my face, it's only there trying to fool the perfect. But when it comes down to fooling you.
What great lyrics. Are those great lyrics or what?
Yes, they were. It's too bad I can't understand them when you're singing.
I'm Lindsay Gottlieb, assistant coach with the Cleveland Cavaliers. It was a pleasure joining the show today, but I'll continue to say that I will never listen to Wine and Gold Radio.
Now, back to Wine and Gold Radio.
Hello.
Okay, welcome back to Wine and Gold Radio. Tad Carper sitting in the hot seat for Juan Miguel today. Yes. Juan Miguel had some technical difficulties. Jared Allen couldn't make it over there. We looked down the bench.
Jared was busy watching the Mars landing.
So we looked down the bench. Here's a Hall of Famer, Tad Carper. Tad, if you could, describe your job. I don't know if I could.
Well, I don't know if I can. to tell you the truth. I am the chief communications officer for the organization. And as part of that, my group, as I refer to it here.
Amazing group, by the way.
Is phenomenal group. It covers the communications team, the community relations team, and the broadcasting team. And collectively, that's what I do, you know, overseeing that and all the elements that are bits and pieces and parts of that on a daily basis. But then also... get involved with our business strategy planning with our executive group, and you know, without going into too many boring details, but we're involved with you know, the storytelling of the not only the franchise but the organization. Mm-hmm. And as we also found out earlier today, we have a new umbrella entity and brand platform that sort of unifies all of the teams and venues that are part of our organization, and provides that name and brand of Rock Entertainment Group to refer to it. And and so that's, you know, something that we're looking forward to moving forward. It really ties all the threads, as we like to say, together between the teams and the venues and all of the things that we're involved with on a business and together, and gives us a way to refer to it collectively. Yeah. It's kind of clunky to always refer to us as the Cavaliers and Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse organization, you know, or the Cavaliers Operating Company, which, you know, founds
so now it's
very
Rock
legal.
Rock Entertainment.
You know, so Rock Entertainment Group.
Yeah, it sounds cool.
The greatest thing about that is, and we just learned about this today with taping this, like, at the end of the day, Tad, the bottom line is how we are going to improve the communities that our organization is involved with, which is, for the most part, it's Cleveland and Detroit, correct?
Sure. And, you know, with respect to Cleveland specifically, and the things that we're involved with, you know, since Dan Gilbert acquired the franchise here in Cleveland, you know, there's been over $2 billion, with a B, dollars worth of investment that he has made, our companies, our family of companies, have made here in Cleveland. And that's impactful. And it's not only impactful from a business and an economic impact kind of perspective, but it's also impactful with the focus and commitment we have within the community too. And I think there's never been a year where that's been more prevalent than the year that we just went through right now. So in fact, it's over a year now that things have really been ramped up in terms of our community engagement. So it's something that's part of our core that we believe in. We believe that we have a very unique and special relationship, and really a responsibility and accountability within the community to do some of the things that we've been doing over the last year. And whether that's addressing racial and social justice and equality issues, or things that are also somewhat tied to that too, in terms of, you know, food disparities and accessibility and you know, things of that nature matter to the fan base and our community, and we feel we're part of that.
We
you
are.
Know,
done,
it is. It is a family, you know, kind of perspective. And you know, we found out, you know, in 2016 when we won the championship, that this is a generational kind of fan base and platform that we have that brings people together. And we understand that we have a unique voice and role in that equation within the community. So it's more of a situation where we understand that we're part of the fabric of life here, and what does that mean? How can we merchandise that in a responsible, accountable kind of way? And that's what we try to do.
That was a really grown-up answer. I wasn't ready for that, Ted, actually.
I'll try to work on that.
Now going back to Rock Entertainment, I know you're a concert lover and a music lover.
I am.
I always like to tell the story. When everybody asks me about Tad, how cool Tad Carper is, I said, this dude went to the Berlin Olympic Stadium to see Coldplay.
Yeah.
I tell you everything.
That was pretty sweet.
But I just can't wait to see what this is going to mean in terms of entertainment, really, like at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Because if there's one thing we know about Dan Gilbert, that he always goes for hitting it out of the park and
goes
not just
big.
That's just a no, simple thing.
That's true. And, you know, the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse as a concert venue is one of the top concert venues in the country and actually ranked as one of the tops in the world. And maybe people don't realize that. We probably do a poor job promoting that.
Yeah.
but it's true. And that speaks to people love music in Cleveland, and they should. It's Rock and Roll City. Hey,
yeah.
You know, that's all part of it. But the driver for us is to, again, as you were saying, Rafa, be aggressive. And we're really focused on making a habit of out kicking our coverage. Just really exceeding at a higher level. We don't engage in any of this, you know, the market is too small or not big enough, right, or anything like that.
People will come here to watch it.
We do not we do not subscribe to that.
Build it and they will come.
This is a great market and great fan base and great corporate base as well. And we're all in with really exceeding expectations when it comes to that, and we've been able to do it, especially with respect to the concert business. We've got great local partners. I mean, Live Nation is a wonderful, wonderful partner with respect to music. But it's a commitment that we make to be aggressive and make sure that Cleveland is definitely one of those must stop
must stop
places.
I don't like when a band doesn't stop here. It offends me.
No, and
it does a little bit, but it happens,
right?
It does happen, but
we do compete, and that's why the transformation was so important. Part of the reason it was so important anyway was, you know, we do compete with our surrounding regional marketplaces for shows, and with this being home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the great partnership we have there, you know, we think there's an appeal to playing Cleveland and doing it in a big way. You know, the induction ceremonies that are coming up here at the Fieldhouse for the first time.
I never understood why it wasn't in New York. It wasn't in Cleveland when there was.
I think it was an evolution. I think it was still an evolution and a process.
When I lived in New York, I loved it. But now that I live in Cleveland.
Right. Right, exactly. And boy, this year is going to be tremendous. And one of my favorites, Foo Fighters, is being inducted. So I'm a Foo Fighters fan as well. Okay. And it's a big lineup. And Jay-Z.
Great, incredible lineup.
And Tina Turner as well, right?
Yeah. I've seen Jay-Z and the Foo Fighters here.
Yeah.
Best concert you've ever seen here, Ted?
Oh boy, here, you know. Well, I'm one of those, you know, Coldplay nuts.
Yeah.
And seeing Coldplay here, I saw them several times within the last couple of years. And as Rafa alluded to, one was in Berlin at Olympic Stadium, which
that's
was
amazing.
Tremendous.
That's just,
I mean, the historic, the history in that venue.
Just being in the venue.
And the environment and, just was amazing. But I would say the Coldplay show just is such a spectacle live.
Yeah.
And one of those shows where everybody's singing every word of every song and they're up and you got people laughing and shouting, you got people crying because they're so emotionally moved.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. We went with some friends and, you know, at one point everybody's up and bouncing around, dancing and singing. And
that
at another point, I look around and people next to me are crying and weeping.
That's a concert right there. full emotion.
Yeah.
I've never been to a concert here at the Fieldhouse.
Oh, really? I'll tell you, and I thought about you and concerts on the way down here because of Springsteen's Rosalita came on live. And I thought to myself, Rafa said he would have an open mind and go see Springsteen live.
Yes.
You wouldn't pout the whole time.
No.
Have an open mind.
Yes.
Even if you don't like the music, you have to appreciate Springsteen, the effort.
Again, it's not that I don't like the music. I probably like a lot of his songs and I don't know they're his.
You hate the fans.
I just, that and the fact that it's New Jersey. You know, I'm a New Yorker. So
I had friends in New York and New Jersey who hated Springsteen. Yeah. Same thing. They did. They were like, I'm a Stones guy. I hate Springsteen.
I am a Stones guy.
See, and it's not an either or. I saw Prince here. That was, I thought, my best concert. And then Van Halen got back together real quick And then they broke up and they hated each other after about like four shows, but they came back and reunited, even David Lee Roth, and they came back and just crushed it.
The best concert I ever been to wasn't really a concert, but it was the halftime show for Super Bowl 45, I think it was, in 2005. Oh. And it was Prince.
Princess.
And it was pouring rain, and he played Purple Rain in the rain. And it was a surreal experience.
It was the best concert ever. He was in the round. He was right in the center.
Yeah.
Right at the basketball court.
He was a showman.
The best.
Rafa, I have to ask you, did it move you to tears? Did you weep?
I kept thinking of Apollonia.
Well, when I was on the way down there, I thought, if I go to Springsteen with Rafa, he'll dog me because I may weep at some point. I would.
What?
Springsteen. That's an emotional thing for me.
Have you ever seen The Stones?
I've never seen The Stones.
That's a show you have to watch. I mean, that's a really good show.
And they were coming to
I had tickets for the July at First Energy, and obviously, you know, all our plans changed.
Okay, we're wasting valuable Tad Carper time here. We got to get some stories out of the guy, and we got to go. I want to go in the Wayback Machine because I wrote this down.
Uh-oh.
I got everything. I got pet ownership. We got to get to that. We got to get to pet ownership. But now I wrote down the coaches. And, Tad, you date back. Tad's the guy who hired me right after I invented NBA.com. I don't know if you know that.
No, I didn't know that.
Right. Okay, so Tad and I
do know the story about your interview.
Right. Yeah. I interviewed with Tad. I was ready to, like, run through a wall.
That was the second most important factor in his hiring.
Actually. I'm not sure what the first one was.
And you don't want to ask?
Not in the air, I don't think.
Yeah, Joe, coming into this, I told myself, you know, there's a couple of different buckets of stories. You know, there's
the ones you can tell and the ones
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, basically there's ones that you can tell right now. There's ones that you can sort of let out of the bag when your retirement is imminent. there's the stories that you probably feel much better and comfortable telling after you've retired. And then there's the stories that you take in your bag to heaven with you.
Which are a few of those as well.
And I've got stories in all four of those buckets.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
And so over the years, Tad and I, Tad has seen everything. Again, you have a job where, I always say this about Tad, whatever they pay you, it is not enough. Never has been. Because, again, you have stories that you have to take to your grave, and I'm sure everybody hits you up for stories. Media and friends and family, you say when you go to the church, you get mobbed. For, you know, people.
How the heck am I going to have a book if I...
Well, we'll keep the tasty stuff to yourself, and we'll just get. So you went through coaches, and you date back to actually the Ricky Davis era.
Oh yeah, so, yeah. I came here on the tail end of Sean Kemp's final season.
Oh man,
yeah. And Randy Whitman was the head coach at the time. Jim Paxson was the general manager, who's a wonderful person.
He is
just a great guy.
Agreed.
And then Ricky Davis and for that matter Darius Miles.
Yes. So, but my point, you brought up Jim Paxson in that you have to deal your job, and you've kind of taken a step up from this. You don't deal day to day with the team as much as you did, but you went through Coach Silas, Coach Brown, Byron Scott, then Coach Brown again, then David Blatt, then Ty Lue. GMs, Paxson, Danny Ferry.
Throw in Keith Smart.
Smart, right. Chris Grant, Griff, Kobe. You have to deal with so much, or you had to back then. Tell me some coaches' stories. I remember Paul Silas. We just told the Ira Knuble story last week about him in Atlanta with Coach Silas.
Oh, my goodness.
I know you were there for that one.
You know, Papa Bear, as many of us referred to Coach Silas. Yeah. And, again, just a wonderful, great guy to work with and talk to, and has such a presence about him and a calm but then, you know, fiery demeanor when needed. You know, Paul was one of these guys that, you know, we would be on the bus, you know, landing in a, as you all know, you know, you touch down, you get on the bus, and, you know, back then we only had one bus, and it was a much smaller travel party. Mm-hmm. And so you had everybody on the bus. You had players, staff, coach, you know, everybody fit on one bus, basically. Mm-hmm. And Paul would sit in the front seat of the bus right when you went up the steps and would sit there. And Paul would quite often start singing. And you would hear him singing on the bus. And this would occur, you know, at any given time. You know, it could occur at
2 in the morning.
Right. At midnight, you know, depending on when you landed or where you were going. Or or it might occur on the way to practice or shoot around or, you know, no matter where you were. And he would start singing. And I think that sort of green-lighted other people to start singing too. You know, as we all, Austin Carr was prone to break out in song.
He was
quite
prone.
Now frequently, you know, AC limited his singing to the plane and would quite often break out in song, and he'd have headphones on, and I think
like a candle in
probably
Billy Joel.
And you know, we all love AC, but he should not be singing outside of his own shower.
Yeah,
you know, he should probably not be singing.
Right,
and so that doesn't happen as much now as it did once upon a time. But we had a number of singers, and as you know, players would be singing, and you know, the intersection of music and basketball, you know, has always been alive and well.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, I think about Paul's presence and him singing and him being right at the head of the front seat on the bus, you know, heading down the highway. And you know, a couple of, there's some good, you know, Paul stories, but one of which was we were playing a preseason game, and I believe it was it might have been Bakersfield, you know, it was a smaller, you know, market. We were out in California, and we were heading down the hallway, and this is partly a story about him, but it's probably more so a story about Mark Cashman, Cobra,
yeah.
Who I think has been a guest with you guys,
yes,
you know, previously. Mm-hmm. And we were heading up down. We had a local bus driver who was not accustomed to driving, you know, professional sports teams around and getting them to where they needed to go. And he got us out on the interstate, and the guy got lost. Not lost, but I think he kept on forgetting to get off at the right exit. So the players, you know, naturally, you know, everybody's getting a little antsy and mm-hmm. wondering, okay, where are we going? Why we just came down the other side of this highway. Why are we going back the other direction now?
Right? These guys want to get to the hotel, man. They don't want
right.
To...
And so we're going up and down, and so we passed a small roadside sort of out in kind of farmland, you know, territory, where there was sort of a no-tell motel, you know, along the side of the road set up, but they had an asphalt old basketball court on the side of the hotel, and it was very visible from the road.
Yeah.
You know, and so decided to play a little prank and told the bus driver at that point, hey, We got to go back down the other side of this highway again to get where we're going. But before we get there, now that you know where we're going, we're going to pull off at the exit where that asphalt basketball court is. Mm-hmm. And just see how everybody reacts to it, you know, because the implication being that
we're staying there.
This is where we're going to practice. We're going to practice on this, you know. We can't find where we're going, and this is where we're going to practice.
Baby.
Right. And so we pull up, and the court is in view, and guys are looking out the window, and Cobra gets up and barks out his, you know, okay guys, bring your bags to the, you know, to the, off the bus with you, you know. And first there was just shock and quiet. And I can't remember which guy it was, but you hear somebody in one of the guys in the players in the back, you know, just shout out, "Oh hell no!" and we, you know, everybody, you know, just busted out, you know, laughing because we carried it through. We pulled off the exit, pulled up like we were about to get off, and then got back on the highway and got to the arena.
Cobra's like the king of practical jokes too. I mean, he's like,
oh, he's
there, and mostly we don't even know, but you know, you show up at a hotel and Mr. Met will be there.
Remember when we were at the Grand Canyon University, and then out of nowhere there was like 150, 200 students outside of the gym where we were working out.
Yeah.
And they covered Cobra with a towel and made like coverings so nobody ran him out of the bus.
he's a Cavalier treasure.
Yeah. You know? He is.
He really is.
There's another guy who doesn't get paid enough for what he does. You know, when you think about it, man.
My goodness.
And he's seen a little
bit. We always say, what will happen if Cobra disappeared one day, like at 1 o'clock on game day on the road? Oh. You think everybody will make it to the area? We will make it on time to the game?
It would be in doubt.
my equivalent would be, like I said, it'd be if you left a bunch of fifth graders, like you took them to a field trip in Washington, D.C., and you left them
right
there. That would be the Cavs if Cobra left.
Well, and you know, things were, you know, they've progressed over time. Mm-hmm. You know, things were not the same back then as they were. You know, I remember LeBron's rookie year. And we were playing in multiple summer leagues. We were down in the Orlando Summer League. We went to the Boston Summer League. And so the way that we got everybody to the venue was, you know, we had a bus, and quite often there would be an early bus where, you know, some of the coaches' staff need to go set up stuff and whatever. And then we'd have a couple of really oversized SUVs. Mm-hmm. And we were headed to Orlando, the old O-Rena, as it was called back then. And we had one SUV left, and out comes LeBron and Darius Miles and Carlos Boozer.
Oh, man.
And... You know, I'm blanking on the off the top of my head. There was another player as well, and yours truly. And so I pile in. You know, I get in the back. You know, the far back. You know,
right.
You know, I'm definitely the smallest guy. Right. You know, and we jump in, and you know, the windows are all blackened out, and you can't tell who's in it. You know, really. And we take off, and we're all of a sudden we realize nobody's in the driver's seat. Like, who's going to drive? You know, so Darius gets in. And he's going to drive, and so we get out away and on the highway, headed to the arena in this SUV, and there were moments along that drive. Because the traffic, if anybody's been in Orlando and the highway, you know, the traffic's bad.
And, Disney, yeah.
And so we're there, and, you know, it's getting late, and we got to get there. And this is, you know, LeBron's first big, you know, preseason game ever.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
And, yeah, so we're in this SUV, and we're driving along the road, and we're heading off on the curb a little bit and whatever, you know. And
so can I stop you for a second?
Yeah.
So Darius Miles drove LeBron in a van to his first preseason game ever?
Yeah, and others.
Okay. Yeah, okay. All right.
So,
I just wanted to make sure.
So we're driving along, and at one point, I think all of us were questioning the wisdom of this and wondering. It's like, oh, my gosh, we just want to get there safe. And, you know, and we pull in, and yeah, at that point, the crowd had started to ascend on the and this was a sold out arena for a preseason game, you know, because of LeBron.
Huge, yeah.
And that group that we had, and it was the most amazing summer league team ever, you know. And so we start pulling through, and we have to go through the security checkpoints and the traffic controls right around the arena, and they're right, and we're in a car line with just other fans pulling in their cars and around to get around to the back side of the arena to go in the loading dock. And people are tapping on the window, and they can't see. They don't know who's in the van,
right,
you know, at that point. And and they're trying to scalp tickets. So they're literally approaching the van.
And LeBron's in the van. They're
trying to scalp tickets to the game
that
they're going to see, and they have no idea who's in the van, you know. And we're just like, don't do whatever you do. Don't roll down the window. Do not roll down the window, you know. And finally creep around and get through to the back of the loading dock area to get into the arena. But, you know, some of those funny moments that occur on bus rides and in vans and on the plane, and, you know, those are some of the best memories.
I was just going to ask you, because we're going to D.C. now, or the next stop for the Cavs, and that's kind of your hometown. And there's so – when you tell stories, it makes me think of other stories. Were you on the bus when we pulled into – the DC arena, and David Wesley somehow came from outside the loading dock, and somehow, and everyone wondered, how did you get here?
No,
it was in the playoffs. We bet, you know. And again, you guys have all been you know what was Verizon Center?
Yeah,
the bus backed in, and you know, and David Wesley is. I think someone dropped him off at the arena, and he kind of tried to make it like he was on the bus, and he was just getting off.
He was trying to migrate into the flow.
Exactly. He tried to kind of get like sneak in, like I was actually on the bus, and they all busted him. They're like, "Dude, what the hell are you doing here?"
Well, that's a veteran move.
It was a great veteran move. Yeah. He tried to kind of, like you say, tried to migrate like right and be part of the team.
Absolutely.
Everyone busted.
Now,
absolutely.
Is the food scene one of the things you miss the most about not being on the road?
Oh boy,
you're a foodie.
The foodie. And you know, there are certainly some great fancy, you know, dinners and events, but some of my best memories over the years were just, you know, BJ Evans, our director of basketball communications, who you guys know quite well, and I, you know, spent an inordinate number of time for, you know, for the better part of a decade or so, walking around these cities all over the country, you know, just basically looking for some wings.
I was going to say, you could write a book just on your wing
adventures. We liked ourselves some wings. And we knew the places to go. It was not above us to find two places in one night, to have wings from two different places in the same night. And Boston was one of those places where, you know, we hit kind of hard because we were there during the playoffs, and so we became very familiar with the wing landscape there and knew where to go. And we got to the point where we got to go to this place first, and then we got to go to the next place after that, you know, so we were hitting multiple places in one night.
What's your favorite city? I mean, not just for food, but for everything, just for...
Yeah, and a lot of people have asked me that over the years. And, you know, I really like D.C. Just so much in the whole vibe and energy in D.C. and the fact that we stay right down in
Georgetown,
the middle of Georgetown.
Yeah,
was a huge...
There's a huge tourist attraction there, too, the Exorcist Steps.
Have you ever been to
Anytime
the
Exorcist you go
step?
There, boy, you got to go... You don't want to miss that when you go.
I always tell people, make a left out of the hotel and go to the Exorcist Steps before you make a right and go to Pennsylvania.
There's not much to do in D.C. You might want to go check out the Exorcist Steps.
other than that, San Antonio, really, really a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Great food. You know, if
Rosario's.
You like,
yeah,
Rosario's. Yeah. You know, legendary. You know, a restaurant there that we took advantage of. And, you know, quite frankly, because you spend so much time in some of the cities that you are in the playoffs with. So if you go back to the finals run and, you know, spending so much time in San Francisco, that you really become familiar with it and on a walking basis, you know, and you discover places and restaurants and small. I'm not talking about big fancy.
Right, you know, exactly. Places. You find your
now. Are you the type of
bar kind of place?
Exactly.
Are you the type of person that goes to the same place like when you go back again, or you keep searching for different?
You know, I struggle with that.
Yeah.
And because when something's
I had
not
a sushi.
Broke, you don't want to fix.
I had
it.
A sushi place exactly. that I hit every time you know, we went to.
But we'd force ourselves to do that.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're only hitting it. you know, 2-3 times a year,
yeah,
then you tend to know to go where you know it's going to be good.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of places out there in San Francisco that we would hit every single day. And we were usually there for multiple days,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So that always helped.
And then, and I'm not going to ask you to, you don't even have to name it, but were there other arenas, cities, venues that, boy, you just,
man, well, the old,
I wish I could skip this one.
Yeah, the old Nets Arena.
the old.
In Newark?
Rock?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, that was bad.
Right when the playoffs, those
that was
years,
bad.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no bad cities for me.
Yeah.
You know, they're all good.
Yeah.
They're all fun. They all have things
they
about
them. They all got something to offer.
That are great. Yeah. Right, right, exactly. And every city does. But there were some features of some arenas that made it difficult. You know,
Philadelphia.
Right. Or the old, you know, the Palace, you know, over in Auburn
Hills.
That
was more like the Thrive, I think.
You know, but the thing about the Palace was the visitor's locker room was the size of a postage stamp.
Like Fenway Park, you know? Yeah.
And so it made it very difficult operationally to do some of the things that we did in terms of media and availability. But it also was difficult just from, you know, a training and medical staff
and
coaches. I mean, it was just really bad.
And you know what I hated about the Palace as well? That on the way out, the bus wasn't inside the tunnel. You have to walk out. And usually, it's like
outside.
Chicago, that's the same thing. You have to walk all the way up to the ramp.
Yeah.
And it's cold.
Right. Right.
And I have a story about each of those things. One, the small locker room, Wally Szczerbiak yelled at me after a playoff.
Yeah, because you almost stepped on him.
Because I almost stepped on his foot because the locker room was so small. And then the other one, when you talk about the bus in Detroit, I got left one year after a playoff game.
Yeah.
I went running up the
you
tunnel.
You got left to go left. To the hotel? Or
no,
you got
left in the city.
Wow.
Yeah, I tell you what.
They drove back
that
to Cleveland.
That never happened to me.
Yeah, I went running up the ramp. And
life traveling with a professional sports team will make you punctual.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yes.
Because if you aren't there, let me tell you, that bus is leaving. That plane
I
is
always
leaving.
Say they'll wait for some people, not for me.
It just doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yep.
It just doesn't matter. Toronto is another city that
I love
is
Toronto.
High on my list.
I love Toronto.
Good.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
Other
really.
Than getting in and out with the customs. That's,
well, yeah.
That can be
yeah,
a pain,
then
but.
Yeah, and we've had some struggles there from time
yes.
to time.
I always got harassed there. Coming. You know what? I never had an issue going into Canada. I always had. It was myself, Musgrov, Potapenko, all the international dudes.
Guys, right.
I always got like sent back to the room on the
how,
side.
Why would they break again? You
and I got an American passport.
Staff, I can understand. Players, what do you think we're trying to do? Do you think this guy's a 7-foot millionaire and he's trying to struggle heroin?
No, right.
I mean,
no,
exactly,
and does make you wonder what the motivation.
That's what
is.
I mean when they keep players there for 2 hours. It's like. Dude, he's playing.
There was one time that I told the lady that was I came in, you know, and it happened every time. I'll give you my passport, and she'll be like, "What were you doing in Toronto?" I'm like, "I'm with the team. I'm with the Cavs." And what do you do? I'm the Spanish voice on the radio. Okay, and have you been to South America? I'm like, "Yes." I don't remember when. Whatever. So one time I said to her, you know, why do I always get harassed when I come back to the U.S. from Canada? And she said to me, "Do you feel like you're being harassed?" I'm like, "Well, yeah. I'm traveling with 55 people. There's 54 over there, and I'm still here."
Right. I'm so glad you're on the trip because that used to be me.
Yeah.
Now it's you. One time we were coming back from Canada, we were at that checkpoint, and Joe Tate said to the guy, "Check that guy with the beard over there." And he did. He pulled me aside and did the whole thing.
Yeah,
you know,
I always
got
that in Canada.
True.
But I love Toronto.
True.
Toronto is an amazing
city. That is. That's
amazing
an amazing city. Yeah.
What city has the best spicy stuff? I know you like spicy food as well. So.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, you think about San Antonio.
Yeah.
You know, really, it's hard to beat when it comes to that. If you like that kind of food, you know, they got plenty of it.
Plenty of it.
Yeah, and it's all high quality.
Is there a fraternity with guys that either do your job or have done your job, guys around the league? Because I always say there's a Joe G with almost every team
now.
There's a Rafa, not with every team,
many,
but most, many teams still. Is there a fraternity
there
where you guys all say?
There is.
Because, again, you, more than anyone else in this company, like you said, you have stories that you're going to have to take to your grave.
Yeah, I mean, there is, and there's a mutual understanding and appreciation
yeah.
For for some of the things that you do. But you know, some of the guys that have been around for, you know, David Benner in Indiana with the Pacers.
Yep.
Is one of those guys.
Yeah.
And Tom James with the Spurs is definitely one of those guys that you just develop a really good, you know, relationship beyond just the basketball mechanics of what your job is in terms of communications elements and PR and media and all that. So, you know, things like that, you know, Tom James and I had a sort of a mutual kind of point of connectivity with Danny Ferry, you know, because Tom, you know, really had a strong, close personal relationship with Danny Ferry. And then when Danny was here, I did too.
Yeah.
And so we would get together and you know, we were down there, you know, go to Danny's house that he maintained in San Antonio. And you know, it was, so you have situations like that, of course. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you have it in all businesses, but, you know, and also with the league communications team, you know, the Mike Bass, the Tim Frank, Mo Coyle.
Don't forget my girl, Joanna.
And oh, my goodness. You know, the list goes on of, first of all, we're talking about just such high quality people and professionals at what they do. But then beyond that, just the personality and the relationship that evolves and develops over time, especially, you know, during the playoffs and when you're one of those teams that's on national TV so many times and things of that nature. And then you think about the national media and people like Doris Burke and others that are just such quality human beings and people, Mike Breen, you know, people like that that you become friendly with and that you know and interact with quite frequently are just such, you know, I consider myself so fortunate to be able to know them and have that kind of relationship with them.
And this is what I was saying earlier, in that you have to deal with, again, Mike Breen and Doris Burke and the players and the broadcast team and Rafa, who's hugely high maintenance.
Oh.
So, I mean, you have to deal with your team and the team and the medical team. And, I mean, it's just so many moving parts for that job.
Yeah. There's a lot of threads that need to be tied, again, to go back to that term. You know, but I think you know, everybody has a respect, for the most part, about what everybody's role is, and you have to.
Yeah.
You have to respect what everybody's individual part of an element is, because you need all of it sort of moving in a positive same direction, or it causes a problem.
Right, and with the machine that the season is.
And we've just been so fortunate to have so many good people, you know, including players. You know, I think back, you know, over the years, and, you know, even people, you know, fans might think, you know, about a guy like Ben Wallace, and they go, oh, man, what a bad, mean, you know, kind of guy.
Right.
You know, Ben Wallace was the nicest guy. The nicest, friendliest, most respectful, funny, you know, guy ever. And his persona on the court was much different, you know.
I got there. Big
Ben don't sing or dance.
One of the things that people don't understand, I'm talking about respecting what everybody else has to do. I admire the most difficult thing for me would be on your side is to be able to say no. And still people say thank you. Because, you know, in your job, in your position, it's not all the time.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
And is that a hard part? Or was it hard to learn?
No,
or?
It is. And it is, quite frankly, you know, probably more no's than yes.
Yeah.
You know? But I think it's not a personal thing. I mean, it's all part of maintaining a level of professionalism and being able to explain things and provide context and in the midst of not being able to fulfill some certain request that somebody had, or you know, part of that formula is, okay, here's what we can do. You know, here's, you know, we might not be able to do this, but here's what we can
do. Right.
And that's a critical part of success, I think.
Yeah.
Learning to deal with players, again, NBA players are not – there's 450 of them in the world. They're elite athletes. They're different kinds of people. Did you have to learn how to – I mean, obviously you did, but what was the process like of learning how to deal with NBA players? I mean, it's not an easy thing.
You have to understand the environment. You have to understand the nuances of an environment, of when to approach somebody about something, when to sort of give them their space, how to approach them, what to say, what not to say. You know, there's nuances involved with that environment, especially in a tight quartered space like a locker room.
Right.
And quite frankly, there's a lot of emotions and involved, and a lot of expectations on people, and being able to navigate that is a bit art, you know, artful. But you know, it also helps when you just have good people, and everybody's different. You know, everybody has a different personality. Can't expect everybody to be the same. And understanding the differences, and understanding also that a lot of our guys have just been. I was creating a list of guys that were just nice, respectful, normal people to interact with and talk to, and you know, and I started going down the list, and it's like, my gosh, I'm going to need a couple of pages for this, because we've had so many good people to interact with. And even people, you know, people might be, well, what about, you know, Ricky Davis or
a great guy
or somebody, Delonte West, or, you know,
great
guy to interact with. Fun, nice, cordial, respectful, pleasant, you know, to work with and interact with. And I'm just talking about on a human level. Yeah.
I can say in 18 years, I can count the jerks on one hand.
Right, exactly. They're just so few. That's so few. And people think, you know, they're high maintenance or whatever. Not, you know,
They're kids that just,
Let me ask you a question. I'm going back to the beginning of our conversation with the process that we're going through right now and all the young kids we have. Is there a, I don't want to say a checklist or something, but you're also part of your responsibility is to teach these kids what they're about to face.
Oh, sure, and point things out.
You know what
and,
I mean?
And sometimes it's a situation where, you know, you got to put your finger on the stove, you know, the first time before you really understand, you know. But, and that's part of it. But I think, again, advising and helping them understand in the right way. And there's a way to go about that and approach that with, and again, depending on the personality of the individual involved. And it's absolutely something that this organization has always taken very seriously as part of the equation. And, you know, Kobe Altman's been very committed to that before him. David Griffin was very committed to that. You know, you go right down the list, and people get it. They understand the value of that in helping people grow and learn and mature, even though they're at the pinnacle of their athletic part of the equation and their sport and basketball part of the equation. You know, everybody's still learning with that too, but certainly far more mature when it comes to how to play the game than, you know, maybe how to deal with some of the business and media and other elements that are involved with it. And that's sort of the culture shock to it all as well. And then helping them come to grips with that and learning how to manage it. You know, you got guys like Anderson. Anderson came into the league and didn't really speak English, you know, that well. You know, fortunately for him, he had Zydrunas. And Zydrunas was able to mentor him and
but who spoke a completely different language. Things.
Right.
But there is a connection there,
you know,
between both foreigners. Like they have a lot in common.
They understand. Yeah. And, you know, you talk to some of the guys that are coming in that situation. And, you know, the list is, again, you know, long. But the common, you know, I've asked them, you know, when did the language really kick in, or how did it kick in for you? And I've had more than one that said, you know, when I started dreaming in English.
In English,
Wow.
Yeah. That's the thing. That's when you know. I woke up one morning, the first time I dreamt in English.
Yeah.
And I woke up, I was like, oh, my God.
Whoa, what's going on?
I've
never heard that before.
I was talking in English.
That's so great. I've never heard that.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And that was sort of a turning point. And the nuance of and how humor works within language and being able to comprehend that and use that was really important. But
Moskva was one of those. He was the funniest.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Another great guy.
He was the funniest human being.
Great guy. Yeah. I mean, we're walking down the street. Hey, let me tell you a quick story about Timo. Timo, we're in, I think we were playing in Golden State on Christmas Day. You know, so you're away from your family and you're walking along and everybody, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was out eating someplace, or I went to get something to eat with Timo. And we're just talking about, you know, whatever, observing the shops and not too many places open. I think it might have been Christmas Eve. And walking along the street, we're walking back to the hotel, and we're walking by one of the retail stores. And we had been talking about being away from family for Christmas. And we walk by a store, and he stops in the window, and he looks at me and he says, you know, are you getting any presents for Christmas? You're not going to have any presents. He said, I want to buy you a present in that store. You know? And here's a, you know, it's like the gentle giant.
Yeah.
You know,
I love him.
Kind of thing. It's just a heart of gold.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the nicest, friendliest
and
guy.
Funny, too.
Great sense of humor. Yeah. Funny guy, you know, and just completely normal out of the blue. And it just struck me. I was like, man.
I love Timo.
That is just so nice of you.
Yeah.
You
know? And the thing is, and there's another few stories we could tell about that, but it's 82 games, usually. 41 of them you're on the road, but you're also together. You're in a flying tube for a lot of it. You're in a driving tube for a lot of it. You're in the same hotel. You're in the same gym. You're in the same locker room. Yeah. You have to live together and coexist for 6 months, 7 months, a year. Yeah. You have to kind of be cool. That's why when a jerk kind of pops into that mix, it really throws sand in the gears.
It does.
Everybody needs to get along. We need to get along.
It's
hard. And again, at 2:30 in the morning, you're unloading a truck.
Yeah.
It's not digging ditches, but
yeah, you do function like a family.
You're right. It's like a big family that,
you know, people hear that and we say that, and maybe people take it with a grain of salt and they're like, oh, they're family.
Was I ever sand in your gear?
No. You're the best.
You know.
No, but seriously, in that, Rafa and I have to get along. If we were at each other's throats for as close as we are together, you know, we sit next to each other on the plane, on the bus, it's like, you got to get along, man. You got to get along for those 7 months.
He yelled at me the first time I ever had dinner with him. It was our first road trip.
We were
in Portland, and he came in. I was having dinner, and he came in and sat down, and he's like, hey, what's up? How's everything going? And I started telling him the story about what I did in the morning. I went to the gym and the Nike store, whatever, and I said, oh, man, guess what just happened to me? I just had to give somebody a Heimlich maneuver. Somebody was choking. And he was like, you got to start with that.
What? I'm like, dude, you buried the lead. He told me we talked about football, and then we talked about it, and he goes, oh, yeah, I gave some guy the Heimlich maneuver, saved his life. I'm like, that's the third thing on your list?
Wow.
And the great thing about that story, the shot and the chaser is that the next night we flew right to Denver.
To Denver, yeah.
And, you know, I was telling people as we were unloading the bus, it's 2 a.m, freezing outside, and I'm telling people, I'm like, Rafa, all of a sudden he helped the guy with the Heimlich maneuver. We're all laughing, and I said, stuff like that just happens to Rafa. Weird stuff happens to Rafa.
And this is true.
And all of a sudden a girl comes from behind the desk, comes running out in the parking lot and says, does somebody here speak Spanish? We have an emergency.
Right.
Like, that happened, right? They were like, there you go.
There you go.
There you go. And Rafa, I do.
Yeah. Yet another example.
Yeah.
No, for sure.
He's that guy.
For sure. But, you know, I think it does require a certain, you know, mentality and personality to, because if you can't get along, you know, you're not going to last. And you have to have patience and be able to, you know, maintain pressure and stress that, you know, that happens when you're living that life and traveling like that and in a group, and it's condensed, and you know, there's all sorts of different pressures involved and egos, and so it's definitely important. But my gosh, I mean, having guys like you and Rafa and, you know, our support team, just tremendous. You know, I talked about Cobra, but people like Steve Spiro and, mm-hmm. And just good, talented people,
yeah.
You know, to sort of travel around the world with. And that's really, really important. I mean, you know, and you have to break through sort of the barriers involved with, you know, okay, you know what, even, you know, God rest his soul, our friend Fred McLeod, and, you know, Fred, you know, one of the hardest working people I've ever known.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. You know, legendary for, you know, doing his game prep, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning night, on the yeah. plane where everybody else is kind of sleeping or watching a movie or,
right. you know, turn that light off, Fred.
You know, but even so, breaking through that barrier, you know, we, you know, Fred would leave his camera or his microphone or something, you know,
somewhere,
someplace
everywhere.
Or somewhere. and we all got in the habit of always looking and having his back uh-huh. and making sure that somebody grabbed it. We'd always check, you yeah, know, to make yeah. sure that you're, you know, and if he didn't, if he left it someplace, then we'd grab it and then prank him with it, you know, let him go through a panic moment of thinking that he forgot it or left yeah. it someplace and go nuts and then present it to him, you know,
yeah.
and he got the biggest kick out of that. You know, he'd get a laugh out of yeah. that. But you have to break through to be able to have that kind of relationship, mm-hmm. you know, like a family.
Exactly.
Does, you know,
we always yeah. wonder these things, and maybe you know, do all the other teams have their staff unload the truck and load the way we do?
Yeah, that's very yeah. common.
Okay.
Yeah, that's very common.
I always wonder, we, I think,
you know, sometimes we have so many staff, you know, people, they're unloading the truck where, you know, it's almost
it's quick.
You almost have too many people helping.
Yeah.
Where you can't even, you keep on running into somebody else trying yeah. to grab a bag to
right.
to help.
As much know? As it sucks sometimes at 2:30 in the morning, you know, unloading the truck, like right now, if you ask me, I miss it. I miss that.
Right.
It's camaraderie. It's fun. It's, you know, you're breaking chops. You're talking about the game that night or the flight or something.
It's
or,
part of family life. You know?
Exactly. That yeah. that helps the family go. And I'll tell you, I don't know about you guys, if people don't help unload the truck, I make a mental note of those people.
Yeah.
I do. You got to help, yeah. man.
No, you can't be above it. You
can't
know?
Be above it. Right. Because
can't
if
be
you
above
don't,
it.
The players, I understand, right. they don't. But if a person, if a regular
yeah, staff member
doesn't yeah. do it, that's you're saying, what, you're kind of too good to unload the truck there? So,
yeah.
But I miss it. You know, there's certain things I do and don't miss on the road, but I miss the camaraderie.
Hey,
more than anything, I miss that.
It's a privilege, and it's a tough schedule
yeah.
to keep. You know, that's not a bed of roses,
right?
But it's a privilege to do that because it's a wonderful life.
If you were
know,
to guess,
really
if you yeah. were to yeah. guess when, today, are we traveling next year? Do you think?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. I think it's important to have the broadcasters on site, part of that family, so that there's a deeper sense of the team and the personalities and what the experience is mm-hmm. that everybody's going through.
I totally miss yeah. that.
And the yeah. environment.
That yeah. family environment.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
yeah.
we even though we're still part of the team, this year we have been so disconnected.
Yeah, I hate it.
Watching practice virtually and not
no,
really
it's tough. It's been tough.
Yeah.
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so it's
no doubt.
I always whenever they show like a former NFL player, NBA player, and they talk about what they miss when they're retired.
Yeah.
Almost to a man, they don't say, I miss the games, I miss the winning.
They don't miss the body part. They miss the...
They miss the camaraderie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what they all say.
Yeah,
I miss the family. I miss, you know, the guys and the people. That's... And, you know, again, the road parts of it suck, but that's what I miss is family.
Yeah,
I haven't talked to Steve Spiro. I haven't talked to Gio. You know, these guys are... And they are like family. For the past 15 years, I've spent my winter with these
right.
people. So now all of a sudden they have that gone. It's been weird.
Right.
It's been weird.
Right. It still feels that way.
Yeah. That's why I got a dog. And I know you
yes.
did. And
yes.
I know Rafa's a big dog guy.
Yes.
I can't leave you before
yeah.
we talk.
Yeah.
Atticus, you love the
what
guy.
What kind of dog
oh
do you have?
Oh, my gosh. I have a golden doodle.
Oh, good.
And my wife and I both have allergies. And so we had to get a hypoallergenic,
What's the name? What's the name of the book?
Atticus.
Atticus.
Atticus after Love Atticus that. Atticus yeah. Finch yeah. From To Kill a Mockingbird fame. And he's a golden doodle. He's wonderful. He's arguably my best friend.
right?
Which is scary.
Yeah. But
especially developed over the last year, you know, being at home so much.
Yeah.
And he's really become, an emotional, support, dog, kind of thing. But he's fun. He's happy-go-lucky. He's playful. He loves all dogs. He loves all people. And, he really has had an impact on our lives.
And yours is Rosalita
Springsteen song. Yeah. Very much. But I love it. And Humito. Am I pronouncing that right?
Humito, yes.
Humito? Smokey. Smokey.
I have two chiefs from, Chief Brumden, and I had one that was named Nixon, all chocolate lab. I had a Nixon.
And you have two. You still have Chihuahuas?
And a Munson. Yeah, Chihuahua was Taco and Max. Okay. I used to be a foster parent in Miami.
Yeah.
So, but every time I couldn't find them at home, they would end up with me. So,
oh, that's important. Awesome.
I always had three, four dogs at a time.
Oh, that's
now that I came here, I travel so much, I can't really.
Right. No, I understand.
And I miss
completely.
That's probably why I don't have kids, because I miss my dogs when I travel when I was doing the NFL. So.
Yeah,
and I have a beef with both of you guys that you don't like cats. That bothers
me. I'm just not a cat person. I like my animal to share time with me, and I like to. To talk to my animal. The cats are kind of like loners.
They just stare at you. And,
I don't trust them. I don't trust them one bit.
When I look at a cat, I identify more with a cat. I always think the cat. I'm more like a cat than I am like that dog.
Huh.
And then it doesn't need anything. It doesn't need, hey, you want to pet me? Fine. If not, I'll go do something else.
Yeah.
They don't need you. I like that. My dog, he's always looking at me.
But that's the best part of the dog, though. The dog wants to be with you.
I love that. But
wants
again,
to hang.
I'm not like that.
Well, there's very few.
Just leave me alone most of the time. That's kind of what I want.
Very few things that I can promise. One of those things that I can promise is that I will never have a cat.
Yeah.
That's okay, Tad. I still love you. Tad, thank you so much for being on.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Normally, this is where we bum rush the guest. We play the applause, sound effect, and then out you go. But not you. You know why? Because it's time for thank yous, and you know all these people, and you know how great they are. So we're going to do it.
I do.
Let's say our thank yous before we get out of here, as we do every week. Lucy Veras.
Yes. Oh.
Lucy, come on.
Wonderful.
Who's going to be moving to be part of your team?
Yeah, she's actually transitioning over from the digital team and the social media team to the community relations team.
She'll be awesome.
It's
there.
A Lucy, natural fit.
It's
perfect.
So good. And she has a organic, natural love
best human
of the community
in the organization.
And people, so it'll be great.
Yeah. Yes. And speaking of social media, Matt of the North.
Oh, yeah. Another guy.
He's like a Viking. He looks like a Viking.
He's a Michigan State fan, so
that's okay.
We'll let it pass.
Yeah.
He's one of those people that has a seemingly never-ending dedication and willingness to do whatever needs to be done.
Absolutely. Matt Gold, the golden boy, who just became full-time.
Woo-hoo!
We celebrated him last week, but he's so good. That kid is so damn good.
And great to see that happen where he could just – permanently or just on a full-time basis.
And I don't want to say it happens everywhere, but I see that one of the wonderful things about this company that we have guys that have people that have started as interns. Joe Fritchen, whose office we're using right now.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly.
And then there's room to grow, there's room to get better, and I think that's a
super wonderful thing. And speaking of Matt Gold, now there's a guy who gets it. We talked about the season, how difficult the season is. Can you have a sense of humor throughout it? Can you stay on your feet? Can you not let it get you down? That's what this kid has. So
He's really good at putting the Spanish highlight, too, on
is
the
he?
Website.
So right. Yeah. There's just one more
Double
good
thank.
Thing about him.
Double thank for him.
Yeah.
Robert J. Hageman, we got to thank him.
Oh, wow.
There's the guy. He started the same month I did.
Rob, the only problem I have with Rob is that he hates Apple.
Really?
And
he
iPhones.
Does. Mac and trash.
Oh, man.
He calls it a Mac and trash.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. So outside of that.
Yeah.
Every time I start my computer up and it takes me 4 minutes to get going, I think of you, Tad.
You should be an Apple person.
I think of how much you love Apple and how much I hate the BC. Anyway, yeah. But Rob, it's not your fault. It's not your fault, Rob. Joe Moner, we have to thank him.
Yep.
Joe Fritchin, whose office we are in right now, probably stinking it up. But that's okay. It doesn't matter. He just got a recent promotion. Well-deserved.
Yeah, very well.
One of the best in the league.
I'm telling you, I have dealt with tons of people in the side of the business that Joe does, and he is the best.
Yeah.
First of all,
yeah,
we have a conversation with him.
Yeah. We host NCAA tournaments. We host
the big major convention.
The NBA too. You know, it constant feedback that from a broadcast and video engineering perspective that Joe and Dave Dombrowski are the dynamic duo of best in the league.
I'm telling you, I have dealt with the NFL, with the NBA, Major League Baseball, UFC, and these guys are just him and his team, because it's Joe and Casey. I'm sure you have him on the list.
Casey is next on the list. And Casey, the coolest name in broadcasting and the second coolest hair in the company now behind Pat.
Well,
Pat Scanlon drops down to number three. Number three, get a haircut, Pat. You hippie. Get a haircut. Casey Coolis is now number two. Tad is number one, of course. And we certainly can't leave without thanking D-Mac. Tad knows. Rafa calls BS on this every week, but Tad knows how hard D-Mac works. He's the best, right?
Oh, my gosh. He is. And again, somebody that's been doing it for so long and the kind of guy that will stay up all night to get done whatever
Super high level too, Rafa.
And the only person that
at a high level.
The only person I have ever seen serve himself French fries and rolls of bread. That's all he eats.
Leave him alone. And of course, we can't leave without thanking the dynamic duo of Dirty Kurt.
Yeah.
And Big Daddy Marty Allen.
Oh my goodness.
Let's go, Big Daddy.
Those are the two best that do it.
Yep.
We will see you guys. We probably won't see you next week because of the end of the regular season. We'll probably see you in a couple weeks for episode 16 of Wine and Gold Radio. And as always, good night, Freddie Mac, wherever you are.
Fires leaning. The bottom! A Wine and Gold walk-off playoff winner!
You're listening to Wine and Gold Radio.
And boom goes the dynamite.
Cleveland.
That was delicious.